Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
And let's jump straight to the stories coming up in this edition of Africa Link. The UN says in its annual Human Development Report, investing in education is crucial in fighting poverty.
If you're better educated, you're richer, you can deal with risk better.
Sierra Leone continues to battle with the worst Ebola virus outbreak in history.
Every day people are dying, and every day you hear of the disease going to other places.
And we shall also hear how Kaduna residents in northern Nigeria are coming to terms with the two suicide bombings which killed at least 80 people. Hello and a warm welcome to the program with me, Crispin Mwakideu, in Bonn, Germany.
Top story.
The Great Divide. The world's 85 richest people have as much wealth as 3.5 billion poorest, the United Nations said on Thursday in its annual Human Development Report. The gap between the rich and poor is widest in sub-Saharan Africa, despite continued economic growth. This report by Stephanie Dukstein has been adapted for Africa Link by Susan Holton.
There's a promising message for Africa this year. Africa is enjoying higher levels of economic growth and well-being, says Abdoulaye Mardié, the director of the Regional Bureau for Africa in the UN Development Programme, UNDP. He added that in the last 3 years, many achievements have also been made in income, health and education. Rwanda and Ethiopia showed the fastest growth, followed by Angola, Burundi and Mozambique. But then there is the other side of the coin. Sub-Saharan Africa is the region with the greatest disparity between rich and poor in the world. 585 million people live in poverty or are at risk of poverty. That's 72% of the region's population. A major cause for the continued poverty is increasing vulnerability and insecurity, which affects whole nations as well as individuals. The director of the UN Human Development Report, Khalid Malik, explains.
People's vulnerability is influenced by their capabilities in health, education. If you're better educated, you're richer, you can deal with risk better. And the context you inhabit, the societal context, the position you are in, if you're a minority in a majority-dominated country, it matters.
Providing for their large and growing populations, whether with food, education or health services, is a huge challenge for African countries in their current economic situations, despite good levels of economic growth. Ruth Müller is from the Berlin Institute for Population and Development.
The greater the growth of a population, the more people have to be provided for.
High birth rates in Africa are a significant obstacle to progress, Müller says.
If they were to drop, then at some point a demographic bulge would develop, an employable population generating income. When this bulge comes and the jobs are there, an economic machine is suddenly set into motion. And if education is invested in at the same time, that would ensure that more and more economic growth is generated.
Many of Africa's problems go beyond national or regional concerns. The financial crisis, climate change, refugees, the issues are often global. Individuals from many different countries and continents are affected. For this reason, the issues must also be dealt with on a global level, the UNDP report recommends. Approaches which go beyond the scope of short-term emergency aid are the way forward, the report suggests.
Susan Holton presented that report by Stephanie Dukstein. Malawi falls at number 174 out of 187 countries in the UN Human Development Report. More than half of Malawians live below the poverty line, according to the UN. Our correspondent George Mhango has been shedding more light on the issue.
For the poor to be in line with the modern way of living, so that maybe they send their children to school, they are put on medical schemes, there is a very big challenge. That is why most Malawians not even afford to go and pay hospital bills in private hospitals. They just, you know, go to public hospitals, which at the moment do not even have medicines, because it's the top class, the rich class, that oftenly, you know, goes to these private hospitals or can be able to fly out of Malawi seeking medical care. And at the end of it, also pay school fees in foreign countries. So locally, it means the gap is really there.
Malawi's economy is mostly based on agriculture. Does this dependence on agriculture contribute to Malawi's poverty levels?
It contributes to Malawi's poverty level in the sense that when an actual farmer, a peasant farmer, has no fertilizer, then definitely maize production or bean production is definitely lessened. But if they have fertilizer, then the yield is high. And of course, this all depends on good rainfall pattern. And that is why currently there is this call for a Green Belt initiative so that people are able to utilize rivers by irrigating their crops. Wherever there are no rivers, that's why definitely people do not even depend much on growing of crops, but rather maybe rearing of animals. So it's something that at the end of the day contributes to poverty level if, only if, there is poor rainfall pattern and secondly, lack of fertilizer subsidies or just mere fertilizer or even money for them to be able to purchase a bag of fertilizer. So those definitely do contribute to poverty levels.
George Mhango in Blantyre.
Africa Link, because Africa is more than just a headline.
Nigeria's Kaduna State Governor Ramalan Yero has lifted a 24-hour curfew. Yero imposed a security measure after two explosions rocked the northern Nigerian city on Wednesday, killing at least 80 people. DW's Hausa correspondent Ibrahima Yakubu caught up with one of the victims who lost his brother in the second attack.
His body has been blown to pieces. He was my brother and now nothing is left of him. Truly, I'm now tired of this world. He was the only person assisting me in this world. He was the only one I had.
A brother to one of the victims who died in Wednesday's Kaduna suicide bombings. And as I found out from Ibrahima, the city is still in shock.
Well, to be frank, this is the worst situation of terror attack Kaduna has ever experienced. And I must be frank to you, Kaduna people has really shaken. It has shaken the whole Crocodile City, the name of Kaduna. Many people that they have never thought of seeing death is what they saw. Dead bodies around the places and the whole premises and the town of Kaduna was really shaken as a result of this attack that they have never seen. Quite frankly, sometimes back there was an attack by the terror, but this one is the one that really shaken the whole Kaduna city. Many people shed tears and then...
And who do people say was behind the attacks?
Well, this is something similar to that of the one that they used to experience, like the one of Boko Haram. This is the attack that is normally happen. Kaduna has a serious series of example and learning they learn from as a result of attack by Boko Haram. The attack seems to be similar to that of the Boko Haram in view of the fact that the Crocodile City, Kaduna City, has a similar experience, not the first time, not the second time that attack has been happening. Bomb blast is not a new thing, but thank God this is not a religious something. It was a terror attack. It's a clear indication that this is a sign of a Boko Haram attack.
Well, Kaduna City is rarely targeted by Boko Haram. I think the last major attack happened in 2012 when several churches were bombed. What do you think is the reason for this?
Well, you know, the reasons is we're thinking that if you could remember sometimes back, the Boko Haram indicate that they are coming to launch a series of attacks on politicians and prominent Islamic scholars. So we were not shocked, we were not surprised, but the surprises that most people were is that Buhari was the man that they were targeting, and then this prominent Islamic scholar, which is Sheikh Dahiru Bauchi. The last 2 weeks, there was an attack near the Dahiru Bauchi, who is the Sheikh of the Derika here in Nigeria. There was a bomb explosion closer to his house, which seems to be people were thinking whether if he's the one or not the one, until this one that happened. What happened is really a tragedy that shocked the whole Kaduna city.
And why would anyone want the Buhari and the Muslim cleric to be dead?
Well, you know, those are people that predict what they want, how they want it. People wonder, why will they be attacking? They claim that they are Muslim and now attacking Islamic scholars. They claim that they are Muslim and now attacking all Muslim they see. And the attack continue to be hampering much on the Muslim side now. because it's not the one that we know, we experience that they say they are doing for the promotion and for the Islamic laws to be implemented in Nigeria. But now the series of attack now is on the people who are from the northern Nigeria, and they are the Muslims. People fail to understand what kind of attack they are launching now.
DW Hausa Service correspondent Ibrahim Yakubu in Kaduna. You're listening to DW's Africa Link from Bonn, Germany. Sheikh Umar Khan, the doctor leading Sierra Leone's fight against the deadliest Ebola outbreak in history, has contracted the virus himself, government officials said. So far, the virus has claimed 660 lives in three West African states, according to Médecins Sans Frontières, Doctors Without Borders. Theophilus Bender, a freelance journalist in Freetown, has been telling me about the doctor's condition.
According to information received from the treatment center in Kailaun, he is in a stable state right now because he reported for treatment early enough. The Ministry of Health and Sanitation has been emphasizing on early treatment as one of the best ways of treating the disease.
Is it known how he became infected with the Ebola virus?
He was working alongside a couple of nurses, about 20 of them who are now dead. Despite the fact that they always wear protective gears, but questions now arise as to whether those protective gears are the appropriate ones or whether, in fact, more needs to be done in terms of providing protective gadgets for persons in the middle of the treatment of people with the virus. But I can tell you that the fact that Dr. Khan, who was the last person expected to contract the disease, has actually now fallen victim. It has brought in so many worries among health workers and even among officials of the Ministry of Health and Sanitation, who are now in a confused state because, you know, the treatment centers in Kenema and Kailaun are now in the hands of Médecins Sans Frontières, Doctors Without Borders. So you can imagine if these entities were not here, what would have become of the fight against Ebola? I can say that, you know, as a country and as a people, we are gradually losing the fight against Ebola because every day people are dying and every day you hear of the disease going to other places. So we are not longer talking about Kenema District, Kailaun District and Bo District, but we are also talking about other districts that have been affected by the virus. Even Freetown, which is the capital, is no longer safe because every day we have people migrating from one place to another, including coming to Freetown, you know. And most times people come in not presenting themselves as Ebola victims. So, but in the course of stay in Freetown, they are detected and then sent back to Kenema for treatment. So nowhere is safe anymore.
There were also reports that some nurses that were treating Ebola patients went on strike after some of their colleagues reportedly died. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, that is true. You know, a couple of nurses have lost their lives in the course of fighting the disease. In Kenema alone, about 20 nurses have lost their lives. And in Kenema District and Kailaun District, about 40 nurses have actually lost their lives. So it is a very serious situation. And given the fact that the welfare of the nurses who are attached to the treatment center is nothing good to write them about when they put their salaries together, their allowances, the nurses think that they are risking their lives, but they are not being compensated in commensurate terms. So that is the reason why they have been going on strike action.
Theophilus Kbenda in Freetown.
Deutsche Welle, learning by ear. Listen up, shape your future.
Hi there. It's good to have you back for today's episode of Crossroads Generation, Facing the Consequences.
We're standing at the crossroads. We're looking for our way. Crossroads Generation. Today.
We've been following a group of African teenagers who all went to the same high school, Bongo Academy. But the head teacher has discovered that Nikki has been taking drugs, and that's not all.
Apparently, Dan and Mercy have been playing husband and wife and are now expecting their firstborn. The three of you are hereby suspended from Bongo Academy.
Mercy comes from a poor family and she only got to Bongo Academy thanks to a scholarship. Her ex-boyfriend Dan was a boarder at the school. He comes from the neighboring country Laboria, where there's recently been a civil war. Dan's been kicked out of school, but he can't return home. His father isn't answering his phone, and the situation in Laboria is still dangerous. So he's asked his friend Biko for help.
Biko, I need a place to stay for a while, just until I can get hold of my dad. All right, Dan, you can stay here. But we'll have to be very, very careful. Okay. Nobody can know, all right? All right. I don't want to get into trouble.
Since then, 2 whole months have gone by. Let's find out what's been going on with our teenage heroes in the meantime. This 14th episode is called Wear Your Own Clothes, and we start at Mercy's home in Tandika Slums.
Mercy, are you asleep?
No. I'm just feeling a bit tired. What is it, my brother?
When's mom coming back?
I don't know. She didn't even tell me where she was going. Why?
I'm hungry. Hey, Mercy. You've cooked for us every day the last few weeks. Why can't you cook for us today?
Kadu, why don't you just go out and play? I need to rest a bit.
I don't want to. It's boring without Banda. Why has our brother been in hospital for so long, Mercy?
I've told you, Kadu, because he has TB. And when you've got TB, it takes a long time to recover.
Mercy, I'm so hungry.
Look, I'm hungry too. But let's just wait for Mom, okay?
Hey, Mercy. How can you be hungry when your belly is so big? You're lying.
Kadu!
God, please, let me speak to Principal Juliet. My daughter is... I mean, she was a student at this school. I promise it won't take long.
You must have an appointment. Madam Juliet is busy, very busy. Move away from gate. I open for Madam Juliet.
Is everything okay?
Everything okay, Madam Juliet. No problem.
Excuse me, Principal Juliet. My name is Lulu Msoto. Mercy Msoto is my daughter. Please, can I talk to you? It'll only take a few moments.
Ah, it's you, Mama Mercy. Good to see you. But I'm sorry, I'm on my way out now. I'll have to ask you to come back tomorrow.
Please, just give me 5 minutes.
All right, then. Get in the car. We can talk while I drive into town.
Madam Juliet, I'm not used to speaking to a head teacher. But, Madam Juliet, it is so hard for her. It's been 2 months since you sent Mercy away. And my daughter can't eat and she can't sleep. Even though she's pregnant, she's lost so much weight. Please, madam. She made a big mistake, but she has learned from it.
Mama Mercy, I wish I could help. God knows I've already tried, but rules are rules and there are no exceptions, not even for your daughter.
But there must be something you can do. My daughter is the great hope of our family. She's the only one who's had any higher education. Please, give her another chance, Principal Juliet.
It's not me who has a final say on this. It's a school disciplinary board. I fought and I'm still fighting hard for Mercy to be kept on at this school because she's a very intelligent girl. But it's not just up to me to decide.
I see. Well, thank you for your time and for your support, Madam Juliet. You've been very kind. Please, could you let me out here?
All right. One more thing, though, before you leave. Don't lose hope. And please tell Mercy not to lose hope either. There are still other avenues she can pursue, like vocational training or going to a polytechnic.
She's already on vacation, lifelong vacation. Now that she can't go to school anymore.
No, not vacation, vocational training.
What's that?
Vocational schools and polytechnics teach skills that may not necessarily be academic. Mercy could learn a skill that would help her secure a position or be able to work for herself. As a tailor, for example, or a caterer.
I don't think that's what my daughter needs.
Mercy is such a clever girl. She loves books. Please think about it, though, as an alternative. Goodbye, Mama Mercy.
Goodbye.
Hey, Dan, dude, please. You've got the whole blanket to yourself. Dan, come on, stop pretending you're asleep. I know you can hear me. Dan? Dan? Dan?
What is it? Is she coming? Is Principal Juliet? Is it morning already?
Yes, it's morning already. You've got the whole blanket to yourself. I'm freezing.
Sorry, dude. Here. Let's share before you have to get up.
Okay. But please stop snoring. I can't sleep with you lying next to me, croaking like a frog.
Hey, look. I said I'm sorry, man. Let's just get some sleep. Okay?
Yeah, right. Great. So much for getting some sleep. I have to get up now.
The blanket is mine again.
Hey, Dan. Have you seen my white underwear?
No.
You haven't seen the white underwear I hung on the bed frame to dry?
The white briefs, mm-hmm. Eh? Yeah. I kind of put them on.
What do you mean you kind of put them on?
Well, I was running short of clothes to wear. You know, with my luggage at the airport and everything. So, I borrowed them.
You borrowed them? Mm. Man, you can't just keep on borrowing my stuff without asking me. That's my underwear, man, and I don't share underwear. Get it?
I'm sorry, Biko.
Dan, you know what? I think it's time you left.
What?
You heard me. I think it's time you went to your uncle's place here in Kisimba, or else back to your home country.
Come on, Biko. You can't be serious. I thought we were buddies.
We are buddies. That's why I've let you stay here for 2 months. But I just don't think this is working out. I mean, you leave your stinking socks everywhere, and you snow all night so I can't sleep. Not to mention the fact that it's getting difficult to keep on hiding you here.
Hey, is this just because of some stupid underwear?
That stupid underwear is my underwear. And you don't take my underwear without asking me. That's not borrowing. That is stealing.
Come on, dude.
No. Leave, Dan. Now. You can keep the briefs. I don't want them anymore.
And that's it for today. Where will Dan go now? Will he finally manage to reach his dad back in Laboria? And what about Mercy? Will her mother's fight for her to continue her education be successful? To find out more, tune in next time. And if you've missed one of the previous episodes, don't worry. You can find them all again on our website, dw.de/LBE. You can also follow us on Facebook and discuss what you just heard with other Learning by Ear fans. Until next time, take care.
Well, it's almost time to leave the studio, but before we do so, a quick reminder of our main stories. The UN Human Development Report 2014 has called on governments to do more to lift people out of poverty. Nigeria's Kaduna State Governor has lifted a 24-hour curfew imposed following two simultaneous explosions which killed at least 80 people. And a leading Sierra Leonean doctor who contracted the Ebola virus while treating patients is in stable condition. Well, that's about it. You can write to us with comments and suggestions to feedback.africa@dw.de or a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. For more news on the continent, log on to our website, dw.de/Africa. I'm Crispin Mwakedeo. in Bonn.